he spent a whole day, took off his faculty, and let me bring our faculty from all over the university in the sciences to come and listen to people who were absolutely top in what they were doing. I wanted to raise the expectations academically for us. There was identification, identity, and unity, and then the third thing, of course, was that whatever we did had to be absolutely first rate. This is where Stony Brook came in. So this was the first opportunity I had after I got there to see. We had four of these university centers, and the history of all four was each was completely different from the other. Here was Albany, which actually had more strength to begin with than any of the others because it had been fudging all along. Instead of being just a teacher's college, it had created a liberal arts program that had some substance to it. Do you know that there was a rule, there was a law in the books at the Board of Regents that specified that only one college of the state university was supposed to have a liberal arts program, and that was Harper College, which was part of the Binghamton Center. And all the others were forbidden to have liberal arts programs.
Didn't know that.
And I...
That's one reason I left on the field.
I found that out, and I kept it a secret to myself. I don't know whether you want to put this in the record or not, but I can tell you this. Maybe it ought to be off the record. I deliberately forgot that that was a rule, and I did everything I could to build liberal arts programs into all those campuses, and the private institutions got very upset, annoyed, and they called me to task somebody from the Board of Regents, from the State Department spoke to me about it, and I said, what are you talking about? They said, don't you know that the only college that's supposed to have a liberal arts program is Harper? By that time, it wasn't Harper anymore, it was Binghamton. I said, no, I didn't know that. I'm sorry. I said, there are all these things are in place. Faculty have been hired. The program is moving. I said, are you telling me you want me to throw this all out now? Well, of course, they couldn't do that. But they were furious. It gives you a rough idea of what you sometimes had to do in order to get what you wanted to get done, given our circumstances. Well, there was Albany. Binghamton had its liberal arts component from the old Harper College. Outside of that, it had very little else. But we had decided that this was going to be the place where we would concentrate on the social science areas, the liberal arts areas, and move up into the graduate level with these. It didn't work precisely on any of the four campuses, so you had to have all of this on every one. But it was where the major emphasis would be. In Albany, as you see even today, it's in the political science and in the social sciences, but you get a major thrust of the
institution. The closest to the seat of government.
That's right. And they've done some very fine work since becoming a university center in assisting the state government. The criminology school came sort of blossomed during that period. So, Buffalo was a real pain from the very beginning. If I had been here before they had made that arrangement with Buffalo to take over the University of Buffalo, I would have fought it tooth and nail. It was a broken down institution physically. It was not first rate academically. Oh, you could find a few pockets here and there where they were doing some good things. It was in a community where the intellectual life was not understood except by a very few PEDs and some wonderful people living there, but not enough of them. people like Seymour Knox, for example, and others. And we had a college there already, which was developing very well in its liberal arts program and so on.
Was Bethel president?
No, he wasn't. Paul, I have a terrible time remembering either first or last name, but out of all the thousands, you know.
I remember Anderson.
Yeah, there was a man who had been there for a considerable time as president, and he was very good on his feet, politically speaking, and it was all right otherwise, but there was time for a change there, and we did have a change. After he left, Fresno came in. But Buffalo itself presented such a problem because, in spite of their inability to make it on their own, they were ready to go into bankruptcy. In spite of their feeling that they thought they were such a great institution, and in their hearts they knew they weren't. In spite of the fact that the state now was stepping in and handing them really a tremendous opportunity because the millions that were now going to be poured into that place, both in terms of strengthening their program and building a new campus and all the rest of it, there was nothing but enmity there. They hated the state university with a passion, from the president down. The president used to go around making speeches about what it was like to live in a bureaucracy like this. And maybe he had good reason. See, they had already been taken over just before I got there. And I don't know whether they had to report every tiny little thing they did to Albany. The cry I always got when I got there was that you couldn't make a move without asking Albany whether you could do it. So that they were really relegating the presidents of the various campuses to being a bunch of clerks. But I'll never forget the first faculty meeting I attended at Buffalo. They held a kind of a retreat away from the campus. And they certainly made me realize that the message was loud and clear, that they wanted no part of the state university, that they would just as soon I never came back to meet with them again. They were just awful. And the president didn't help because he encouraged the idea. Finally, I had to have a kind of a knockdown drag out. That was Cliff Furness, you remember? So Buffalo, we were going to spend an enormous amount of money, and it all happened, as I'm sure you probably knew at the time, because the majority leader of the Senate was Walter Mahoney, who came from Buffalo, and he engineered this whole thing. The whole thing was a political thing to save the University of Buffalo, and he did it beautifully. I read the contract when I read the provisions of that contract and what they gave to the president and the president's wife and the top officials, you know, in terms of their security for the rest of their lives. And the whole thing was something that in those days they didn't have any sunshine laws, nobody had to see it, or any Information Act, so these papers were never shown to anybody. When I read that, I was really sick at heart, you know, and at the same time have these people going around saying how terrible it was to live under this aegis. Now, Stony Brook was the one place where I thought we can really do something here to make this a top flight research and learning institution. because we don't have a whole lot of tradition down here, we can start from scratch. I found out very quickly that there had been trouble at Oyster Bay. I don't know what that was all about, and I really never took the trouble to find out, because I didn't have time to find out things like that.
Oh, I wasn't there.
Harry Porter told me something about it. He was involved with it very directly. I don't remember, actually, what all the fuss was about. The thing that was bad there, it seemed to me as I first went, was that apparently there had been a misconception on the part of the donor of the land, Mr. Melville, who gave, I think, 120 acres.
He gave 480.
480 acres.
480, yeah.
Two sections, rather. He had a misconception about this whole thing, and I don't know whose fault that was. Here was this sleepy little village of Stony Brook, with its lovely federalist architecture. And he wanted to see a development of this. He wanted to see a small, presumably liberal arts institution, with the architecture melding beautifully into what the village had already. It was just going to be an extension of what was there, and he lived there, and he wanted to be part of it, and so forth. And of course, that was not the idea at all. It was, from the very beginning, agreed within the university that this was going to be a major campus, and ultimately, as we called it, a university center.
That was actually specifically referred to in the field report.
That's right. And apparently, nobody ever showed Mr. Melville the field report. The result was that he and I got along very well, but there was always this theory. He kept saying to me, why are you building things like this here? Why are you doing this? What is going on here? Not having been in at the birth of the thing, I simply couldn't answer him satisfactorily, at least from his point of view. Meantime, I had to spend an awful lot of time in what one might call a series of public relations gestures. I did everything I could to make him feel that he had his interest at heart. He used to call me and practically order me to come down and speak to a Boy Scout dinner or to this or to that. And I never really dared say, no, I can't do it. I haven't got time for this. I went, and I got to know some of the family socially a little too, that would help. But this was my first initiation into it. And I went down and visited it. By the time I got there, some of the buildings were up. There was an enormous amount of mud and dirt, piles of dirt around it.
We were building school in the middle of a construction.
It was a mess.
Right.
I was sick at heart when I saw the building. I felt that architecturally they had no meaning. This was not going to be an attractive campus. And I couldn't understand why that had been allowed. Those were in the very early days of the Dormitory Authority, which I was a member of right after I arrived.
You were in the Dormitory Authority?
Yes. I was on the board of the Dormitory Authority. And one of the things I fought for when I got on the board of the Dormitory Authority was that we would have architects, at least in the state university building. You know, we built for everybody else as well. But in the state university buildings, there would be architects who were architects and not just people who built boxes. I went to one of the, I can't remember which campus it was, and saw some residence halls, dormitories. Shouldn't ever have been called residence halls. They were the worst looking things. I mean, these little box-like structures. structures that are steel, and he got into a corridor, and he said, it was like a jail, except that it didn't have any bars. No beauty, no spot or anything aesthetic about the whole business. And here you're taking young people and making them live 4 years of their lives in these places. And we changed that. Within a year, we had a whole battery of architectural firms all out of the state of New York who were top flight.
Why out of the state of New York from outside?
We were required to have architects who had some headquarters in the state of New York. You couldn't hire anybody who had no relationship to the state of New York. So we had iron pay, and we had Skidding Merrill, and we had, I can't remember them all. I remember that when I was inaugurated,
DeMond, Corny, and Weigel, I know you had.
Who?
DeMond, Corny, and Weigel.
Yeah.
Were one of the firms that worked on the Stony Brook campus.
But that was later, wasn't it? Not at the beginning.
Not at the beginning, yeah. Right.
I don't know who did the first building.
Yeah. Was the construction fund in operation when we got there?
Yeah. And Tony
Adenoffi
was the active director.
George Dudley was one of the three trustees.
That's right. And George has always been a kind of a mysterious character to me. I never understood him entirely. He had great talent. He had certainly had the connections that he needed. But there was something that never quite clicked. I don't know what it was, but it seemed to me he never came up to the expectations that I had in terms of what he was going to do architecturally. Well, I was saying, when I was inaugurated, which was, I wasn't inaugurated until I'd been there about a year. Remember we had that big do at Lincoln Center? That was part of my plan for a dedication. I wanted everybody to know that there was a state university in New York, and we had 1,100 people in the academic profession from all over the country who came out of curiosity, I think, simply. Besides wanting to come and have a little fun in New York. But Ian Pei gave a cocktail party for Lauren and me. I can't remember whether it was the same afternoon or the afternoon before, but at their apartment in New York City. And there were 34 architects there representing 34 separate architectural firms, all working for the state of New York, for the State University of New York. That's how rapidly things changed. And we had, although I was not always pleased with what I saw, some of the campuses really came up so well. Fredonia developed so beautifully, you know. I'm not really crazy about the architecture of Purchase, but it does have some meaning to it. That was Barnes who did that one. Edward Durell Stone, you know what he did up in Albany. Some like it, some don't. He always built monuments to himself. He wasn't interested in anything else. These were fascinating people to deal with, by the way, because they were creative and they were difficult to get mind change. For example, Ian Pei was extremely difficult. I think it was the Fredonia campus, I believe, where he put the major building, the whole new campus built up there. He put the major building of the campus on as the administration building, right in the center, kind of almost like a tower. And when he showed me this plan, and I said, no, I don't think I agree with the concept. I said, the most important building on the campus is not the administration building. If anything, it probably should be the library. And he saw the logic soon, and it was changed. But most of the time, he really had a fight. I'll never forget my struggles with Bunshaft. You remember Gordon Bunshaft, who was Skidding's owning at Merrill? He came up with a $600 million plan for Buffalo, all in one building that looked like a temple at Karnak, a mile and a half long, and he had everything in there. Oh, it's just unbelievable. And he showed me this thing, and I said, I just don't have it. I said, the place is going to be huge enough as it is without concentrating on its hugeness. I said, can't we get back to some kind of human scale here? I mean, these are kids walking around. It was bad enough at Buffalo, at Albany, with those towers and things that they built. Well, he took it very hard, but they never built it that way. In fact, they didn't do anything right at Buffalo, and they got after they got into the general mess.
Back to Stonington.
Back to Stonington. The first field thing that I was involved in at Stonington after I arrived, I saw what was there, was helping to get John Cole to come. It wasn't easy. I went down several times. I think you were there.
I was the one that
you were the,
went down and interviewed him.
You went down and interviewed him. He came to the campus. I went down. I remember having dinner with him at least twice, maybe more. We met with the local council, and I thought he was excellent because of the academic record he had, his understanding of the need from a graduate standpoint, and most of all, his absolutely stubborn insistence on absolute top quality, which is what I wanted. I knew that this man was not going to get a hold of anybody that he didn't think was just first rate. And that's what we needed, not just there, we needed it all over the university. So I was in his corner. And believe me, it wasn't easy to be in John Cole's corner. I would get to my office in Albany sometimes at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I would find him sitting there already waiting for me. I don't know whether he'd spent the night before in Albany or whether he had driven up or what he had done, but he'd be there.
This was after his appointment.
This was after his appointment. He dogged me like a hound dog. I mean, he never let me off the hook. I mean, I need this, I've got to have this man. Now, how do we get it? I was supposed to supply a limitless amount of funds, and I kept saying, John, look, there are other campuses that I have to think about. You're one of four universities. I have to do something for the others, don't you understand? Yes, I understand, but I need this, So you know him, you know him better than I did. He was indefatigable. He wasn't married, so he had nothing else on his mind. I kept saying to him, why the hell don't you get married? So that you'll do
and something. And I introduced him to his wife.
Well, you did a good thing, and you did. He's the same way at Maryland, even today. I run into him from time to time. He gets into trouble frequently. But it's only because he is so dogged about it. But he was the man to have at that time. Because he had plenty of courage. He didn't pull his punches with me. And I didn't with him. After all, I wasn't going to sit there and be cowed by him. But he would tell me exactly what he thought. And I would subtract from that his chauvinism as far as the Stony Brook campus was concerned, and saw that he really should have what he had. But he delivered. Look at the people that he brought there. I mean, there was Yang, and there was the biologist,
Bethany Glass,
Oh, that was, and even in the liberal arts areas, the kinds of people who came were all so good, and
I don't know whether Alfred came or not.
Yes, Alfred. No, he came, he was one of those who came.
We got David Price to break the salary scale,
yeah,
in order to meet Northwestern's bid to get Alfred Kazin.
Well, Alfred Kazin was a great one to have. Then there was a poet, what was his name? Louis Simpson. And there was, it was just a top-flight group. Now, they had a good group up in Buffalo, incidentally, in the liberal. They had some of those people in English, for example, John Barth, the writer. And we had that crazy guy who was always being hauled in for drugs.
Something like Friedman or Friedman.
Well, it doesn't matter, but they had good people, didn't they? They got good people in there, but those all came after the state took over. Well, that relationship with John was close during the entire time that I was there. And I watched with great interest as that campus developed in spite of all its problems in terms of the students and the faculty were really marvelous there and being willing to